meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. It's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. There's a great new book that's out on the market right now. It's called A Question of Murder. It's by that famed forensic pathologist Cyril Wecht and crime author Donna Kaufman, and I'm very pleased to have Donna with me tonight. Hi, Donna.
Hey, Dana. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. Tell the folks a little bit about you. I know you are an investigative freelance reporter and out of the States, and you covered a lot of the cases that we cover here on the show, but tell us a little bit more about Donna Kaufman.
Okay. Well, happily so. First of all, I love Scared Monkeys. It is one-stop shopping for crime coverage, and I read it many times. I found you during the Natalie Holloway investigation and check in often. I am a tabloid reporter, freelancer, and I cover all the biggest cases, most recently now, of course, Kaylee, and anything that is a high-profile trial, homicide, child abduction, or sex crime. That's my beat. And also celebrity autopsies. So in my crime reporting over the years, and I've been doing this since the OJ trial, I met Dr. Cyril Wecht, who is the famed forensic pathologist, that's coroner, the medical examiner from Pittsburgh. He's an author. He's also a lawyer. He has personally performed more than 16,000 autopsies and consulted on some 36,000 others.
Wow.
So I use him a lot when I have questions of medical knowledge or legal knowledge. And independently, we covered four of the five cases in this book, which is A Question of Murder, and it's a Prometheus Books book. And he brought to me the fifth chapter, and I got very into that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fascinating chapters, and they're all very different. The first one is the death of Daniel Smith, who's Anna Nicole's son. He was 20 years old. He died in the Bahamas, and Dr. Wecht was brought there to do a second autopsy. And he followed that case very closely. And there was, of course, the inquest.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a lot to say about the way that this case was investigated. And, of course, people wanted to know, was it murder? Was it suicide? Was it an accident? How did he get the drugs? We get into all of that in this book.
Well, that brings me to my next question. And if you're just tuning in, Donna Kaufman's here. She's the co-author, along with the famed forensic pathologist Cyril Wecht, of a new book called A Question of Murder. There's a link on the show notes on how to get that. People love these high-profile cases. You name it, they're there. The Anthony case is the big one that's out there right now. But Anna Nicole and Daniel, that was both a tragedy and a mystery. And really, you know, when it came right down to it, without giving away the whole book, it's just, you know, something that happened. Let's talk a little bit about Daniel Smith, and just so you know, and you've followed me a little bit too, when I had Rita Cosby on the program here, even I got into a little bit of hot water during this whole thing. So it's a big story. We haven't heard much of it lately, but at that time, to see that young man die and then his mother a short time after that, just pure tragedy.
Just a couple months later, indeed, and the same questions of, was she murdered? Was this a suicide? Was it an accident? Could it have been prevented? And was it properly investigated? Dr. Wecht was brought into that case by Howard K. Stern, and yet, whenever he's brought into a case, he remains independent.
Right.
So he had the ability to interview all the key people And I also covered for the tabloids the death of both mother and son. So we both turned out a very comprehensive, well-researched book. There are so many footnotes and endnotes there and index that you wouldn't believe. So it's very properly done. And not only does it talk about her death, but it talks about Anna's life, and Daniel's as well, too. But Anna's is just off the map of crazy. And there was a very sweet person underneath all of this. But she also had some spiky parts of her personality, and particularly when it came to J. Howard Marshall and other people in her life. So you really get a comprehensive view of who she was and what her whole short, much too short life was like. And, of course, we also cover that crazy trial about where will the burial be that happened in Florida.
Yep.
And where will she be buried in the Bahamas or, you know, Judge Seidlin.
Yep.
That was a side show, really. interesting, I mean, even funny.
Well, yeah, you know, to a point, because there's a huge tragedy here, and to actually see this fought out in the courts as far as where the burial would be, and to have the crying judge, or, you know, and I've interviewed people on my program to say, well, that's just what he's normally like, and I've interviewed people to say that he's just putting on a show, but that's besides the point. There's so many stories in your new book, A Question of Murder, and one, as our time goes by very fast, is the story of Stephanie Crow, which is fascinating, and something that, you know, makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
Indeed it does. And for anyone who thinks that this is just a pro-prosecution book, this will shock you and show that there's a very strong side of Dr. Wett, who helped on this case, free, falsely accused brother of this 12-year-old victim who was slain in her house. And her brother was pretty much tortured by the San Diego police until he confessed, as well as one of his friends, to the stabbing of this young girl. And they were happy to just put him in jail and wash their hands with it until Dr. West and some other attorneys took a look at this and said, you know, this just doesn't make sense. So we go through all of that, and it's really one of the, it'll shake you up, this story, definitely. And there's a book, it's kind of a bookend with the two San Diego cases, the second being 4 years later in 2002, the death of Danielle Van Dam, who was a seven-year-old spirited out of her home in Sabre Springs near San Diego while the whole family was there, and she went missing, and for a couple of weeks, no one knew where she was until her body was recovered in the desert. The story on that is just a heartbreaking thing. The trial was eventually covered on what was Court TV at the time.
Right.
And I happened to cover that from the very beginning and found a big piece of evidence that helped, you know, put the proper person away. Dr. Wecht was at the same time working on the defense, and you might wonder, well, how could somebody work on the defense of somebody like David Westerfield?
Sure.
And it's appropriate that all defendants get a fair trial, and that you have to dig into every aspect to make sure it is a fair trial. So now, does he regret that David Westerfield is now on death row? No.
No.
But he did get a fair trial, and I doubt very seriously there'll be any room for an appeal.
Well, he's doing his job, and I think, and this leads me to my next question, more of a general question, not necessarily about the book. We'll get more into the book in a little bit here. But the public perception of these high-profile cases. A few shows back, I'm not sure if you had a chance to hear it, I had Drew Peterson's lawyer on. I had Joran Vandersloot's lawyer on, and I had Scott Peterson's lawyer on, all at the same time, to talk about the system and the way that the public looks at it. If you have a hated client, no matter who represents the client, they're going to be hated because it's a public's, I guess, idea that to go out and get justice, no matter how justice is served, and maybe question the system a little bit. Of course, we all look at OJ. But what the case is in your book, Donna, and again, the book is A Question of Murder, how do you feed that public desire to get justice in these cases?
Well, personally, I do it via my writing every week for the tabloids. We get into very much in depth in these stories, and we really dig into what's happening in the trial or in the investigation. I did cover the Scott Peterson trial. I was there in the courtroom, which was unbelievable.
I'll bet.
But he did get very much a fair trial, mm-hmm. and I don't think he'll be appealing in any real sense except in his mind, or until his family runs out of money. But, you know, people really want to know the minutiae of these cases. We can see the broad strokes in the media, but they want to know the up-close personal stories. And when a child, or in this case, Connor Peterson, or Danielle Van Dam, or Stephanie Crow, or JonBenet Ramsey, or Kaylee Anthony is affected, they become all of America's children.
Yep.
And there's a fighting spirit that wants to see the proper person put on trial and convicted if guilty.
You know, and that
you know, we just we're there to direct traffic.
Yeah, I like that, direct traffic. We're talking about the new book, A Question of Murder, with the co-author Donna Kaufman. What other stories do you cover in the book?
Well, there's a fascinating one that Dr. Weck turned me on to, which was during Katrina, during and after Katrina, there was a hospital in New Orleans that was an island surrounded by 12 feet of water. And the people inside that building, the patients and the physicians and the medical personnel and people who just went there to find their friends and loved ones were evacuated. But after days of evacuation and the most bleak of circumstances, several people, up to a couple of dozen, were pronounced dead. And these were viable patients who were elderly but sick.
Mm-hmm.
And they were found to have a cocktail of lethal drugs administered to them. Now, how did that happen? Well, we go through every single view because Dr. Weck was brought in and did independent toxicology testing and scientific evaluations along with a panel of people he brought in to try to persuade the New Orleans district attorney to file charges. And there were charges filed.
Yeah.
But there was a grand jury, and what happened there is even as horrific as what happened to the residents of Katrina.
You know,
affected areas.
Exactly, and it's a story that the story behind the story, I think, is the part that makes this so important. You know, Donna, when you hear the name Cyril Weck, do you recognize it right away? If you, you know, my audience does, your readers do, Henry Lee, Michael Bodden, all those names that come forward, but not necessarily
the three top experts in forensics and crime investigation,
But the thing
and by the way, we were lucky enough to have Dr. Bodden and Dr. Lee do blurbs for us. And the foreword for our book is written by Ann Rule, who took me under her wing some time ago and just couldn't have been more generous in writing about us.
That's another good name when it comes to crime reporting. But my question is that when you hear the names Lee and Bodden and Wecht and others, they're not just about high-profile cases. They do cases from all over, whether it's a John Doe case that turned out to be a murder to you name it. There's a lot of unnamed, unfamous stories that they can tell, too.
Well, Oh, you know it. And they do a lot of work pro bono. I probably shouldn't announce that. But they are scientists through and through. They have a mind that loves puzzles and solving them. And there is every year a meeting of the where the eagles soar in forensic sciences. And it's where I met all of these guys. And this is where the greatest of every forensic discipline meet worldwide. They come to these conventions or seminars. And it's just it's awesome to see the cases that they are presented with and how they crack these cases. So, and then sometimes, you know, you do all you can. For example, in the Scott Peterson case, there were 90 bags of evidence taken and no forensic link.
Yeah.
So then you look at other things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a lot of disciplines are involved in cracking cases.
You know, one of the big cases, the big case, although something that gets to me a little bit is there are many other stories to tell, but the main one in the spotlight right now is the Anthony case. It's hardly begun. In fact, the experts that I've had on my program predict that we won't see a trial probably for a year. There's all sorts of forensics involved. You hear Michael Bodden's wife's name, Henry Lee's name. I'm not sure if Dr. Weck's involved in it or not, but here's another story. You say the term puzzle. Boy, there's a lot of pieces to that one.
There are indeed, and it is an absolute... The Van Damme case, as described in our book, is a blueprint of what you're going to be seeing
yep.
at Casey Anthony trial. In fact, some of the exact same people, the the bug entomology experts, meteorology, anthropology experts, all of these various disciplines, they're the same individuals because they're the very tops in the field. Not just for the defense, but for the prosecution as well.
The investigators that see the bugs and the plants, you know, to John Q. Public, they'd say bugs and plants, ew, but those bugs and plants are so important as forensic evidence that when you hear the term entomologist or anthropologist or whatever, you know, putting the bones together, you even have the TV Dr. G involved in this case. This one will be a book in itself, and we may never know the whole story. Your thoughts?
Oh, that's so true. And that is probably my biggest frustration about all of these. You know, you get to the end of a trial and the person is either set free or sent to jail for a good long time, if not forever. And there are still questions that you have. You know, I would love to have Scott Peterson sit down and tell me how it happened.
Yeah.
There are definitely two ways of looking at this, whether he took two trips or one. I would love to talk to whomever killed JonBenet Ramsey, because in a way, the fact that they got away with it is really just something I never spent a day without thinking about that case. And, you know, somebody knows the answers.
You know, one of the few times that I've interviewed someone, but I never aired it and I never put it on the air, was the 10 minutes I spent talking to John Mark Carr on the telephone. And there's a guy that totally creeped me out. And I've been in this business a long time, both as a law enforcement officer and as a talk show host. But that brings me to my next question, is the media and how the media covers these cases. We see nonstop Kaylee coverage on Nancy Grace. Greta Van Susteren does her part. We do what we can here, although we do it much better. We have those types of stories, but I'm curious your thoughts as an author, as someone who's been around the business and around these high-profile cases for a long time. Is the media doing a good enough job, or are we just continue to sensationalize the best we can for ratings?
Well, I think there is some of that, of course, but people genuinely care, or else there wouldn't be the interest in covering these cases. And I mourn the fact that there is not more diversity of victims. But, you know, it is what it is. And yet, you know, Nancy Grace is particularly generous about covering all sorts of missing people, missing children, and has done a remarkable job. But I think we educate the public about things so that they can watch CSI and see somebody have a fingerprint and run it in a machine, and 2 minutes later they get a match, or a DNA match. Oh, it's not like that.
No.
You know, it's not like that in real life.
Wished it was.
I know many, many crime labs that would love to send their overflow to the CSI studios and let them run their magic in real time, because it is not what you see on television. But the true crime shows do help explain the science, and the smarter that the people who are potential jurors are, the more time, the more they'll understand the process.
Absolutely. Well said. With me is Donna Kaufman, and she's the co-author of the new book, A Question of Murder, along with famed forensic pathologist Cyril Wecht. Let's talk about another case that you cover in the book.
Well, those are the five ones. Daniel Smith, Anna Nicole Smith.
Right, okay.
Stephanie Crow.
I miss it.
Danielle Van Dam. There's never been a book on those two children.
I'm miscounting here.
And also it brings home the fact that how can someone sneak into a house filled with people and take or kill there a person and not leave any forensic trace of themselves? Well, we answered that in both cases. And the fifth chapter is about Memorial Medical Center and the horror that happened post-Katrina.
If I was to ask Dr. Wecht a question, and I'll ask you the same question, is quite prevalent in a lot of these cases. Police officers, investigators, crime scene technicians are put on the hot seat. And again, I think we made it very clear that the Bodens and the Wechts and the Lees aren't always just for the defense. They do a lot of work for the prosecution, too. But the poor deputy that shows up on the scene, and because he's lazy or because he's already done 15 calls about a bag that may have some evidence in it, just turns away and walks away, and he's sloppy. That doesn't necessarily mean that the whole case is out the window. I'm curious about how you cover that in the book.
Well, that is, the handling of evidence is definitely where a defense attorney would attack, and we explain some of these things, and especially in the two homicides, and the two girls, there's very much procedure that has to be followed. And, you know, you also have the media screaming for answers and how that impacts the attorneys and the police officers who have to investigate the case. You know, they don't want to give away information. Of course, I'm somebody who wants the inside view, but sometimes, you know, you just have to wait for the answers to come out in trial. But, you know, it's a lot of competing interests there, and you do the best you can. I mean, I still mourn O.J., where I think that some police tampering resulted in framing a guilty man, and that's what the jury in the criminal case picked up on.
Yeah.
So, most experts of the caliber of Wes Bodden and Lee would agree that criminal jury made the right choice.
But it's sometimes so tough to swallow for the public to realize that something like that happens, and not only in O.J. Simpson, but Robert Blake and others of that high-profile nature. But I know where I'm sitting here kicking myself in the butt because I'm asking you to talk about another case, but it's not in the book, but I thought something that's really important that you need to talk to me about is Watergate and Deep Throat, and that I think is so cool. In our last couple of minutes, let's talk about that, because that gentleman just passed away here a little while ago, but you had a role in bringing him forward, did you not?
Yes, Mark Felt was buried yesterday, and one of the things that happened is, you know, it's really one of the enduring mysteries of all our time before he came out and revealed himself. But I was always a Watergate junkie. And as much as Woodward and Bernstein tried to keep it hidden, and in fact, Carl didn't even know who Mark Felt was, I was trying to reveal it. And I kept calling Mark Felt and his daughter and saying, this is the time to give it up. He was afraid he was going to go to jail.
Right.
And I said, you're not going to put a 90-year-old man in jail.
No.
And also, you have the money that you're afraid you'll lose in your pension, your family will more than make up if they do a book and a movie.
Yep.
So it was that I asked the right questions. I got him to admit it to me. And I wrote a Globe story about it in 2002. And then, of course, the Vanity Fair piece came out. Unfortunately, no one picked up on it with the Globe story. But I think people, insiders, knew that I was the one who broke that case. So it's probably, that is one of my two favorite moments in crime fighting, the second being the key piece of evidence I turned up in the Van Damme case. So thank you for asking about that. I'm proud.
Well, you know, I thought it was fascinating. And again, I was sitting here and I'm looking at the show notes, and I knew there was something else to talk about. But the book is A Question of Murder. It's co-authored by my guest Donna Kaufman and famed forensic pathologist Dr. Cyril Weck. There's a link on the show notes on how to purchase it. Donna, our time is up. It goes by so fast. I'd like to do this again sometime.
Oh, you bet. Could I just say, I know you're going to have Tim Miller on. I would like, if there's anyone there who knows how to get this man a MacArthur Foundation grant, that's a genius grant for people who do great things.
Yep.
There's no one around more deserving.
I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. Donna, thank you.
Thank you so much, Dana. Good luck, and thank you all, you scared monkeys out there.
We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Donna Kaufman. She is the co-author of a book called A Question of Murder. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. Following more on the Anthony case, this next story, when I heard that this was happening, I thought, oh my God, what next? Of course, we've heard about the meter reader, Roy Kronk, I'm sorry, the poor deputy, Richard Kane, who's probably just more lazy than neglectful. And now I'm hearing that Casey Anthony's attorney, Jose Baez, is trying to get records from Tim Miller and Texas Equisearch. Why? He's just shooting in the dark, I think, to even try and put anything that's plausible as far as any sort of defense by trying to get records from Tim Miller is just disgusting. And Tim Miller said a long time ago, once you got involved with the Anthony case, or anyone who gets involved in the Anthony case is going to get body slammed. And my God, was he ever right. Tim, how are you tonight?
I'm all right, Dana. Still getting body slammed.
You know, I get so, and I'm an easygoing guy, you know me, but when I see this crap on TV all the time, if it isn't misinformation that people are wanting their 13 seconds of fame by coming on blabbing, and then hearing, you know, the psychics, and then hearing that this Jose Baez is trying to come after you to get records, I just thought, this is nuts, and I'd like to bring you back on. What the hell's going on with this?
You know, you said the right word. What the hell's going on? I know. I just got back from Florida 3 days ago. I went over there. You know, since we did Kaylee's search, we've been on many, many other searches, and Kaylee's not the first missing person, and Kaylee won't be the last one. And the focus on this is sickening.
Right.
I'd literally thought about this, Dana, and said the worst phone call I've ever taken in my life is one from Cindy Anthony.
I believe it.
And it's a shame. It's a shame because you know what? This was about a little girl. Her name's Kaylee Anthony that everybody's forgotten about. And everybody wants to get on TV now and be media circus clowns with the, you know, the Leonard Padillas and the psychics and everything. And not one of them have their facts correct. Not one single person there has their facts correct. And again, they forgot about this little girl. And number one, bias is not going to get my records.
No.
I mean, as I'm not talking what the judge is going to talk. But you know what? Number one, bias does not have a good track record for picking records up, because he did the same thing with the sheriff's department. He went to pick the records up. It was $980-some. He didn't pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already got so much money invested in Kaylee Anthony's search that we cannot afford another penny until we know we're going to get paid for it.
Yep.
Number two, Dana, we had over 4,000 volunteers come in there from all over the country. And I am not going to give Jose Baez all the personal information along with a name and address and social security number, driver's license number, type of vehicle they drive, whether license plate number. I'm not willing to give that to Jose Baez. And as of last Saturday, Dana, we have recovered our 95th victim in 8 years and brought over 300 home alive safely, and many, many of them wouldn't have been safe. And you know what? Our volunteers are responsible for at least 70% of all the fines that we've had. And my concerns are also is that the next time we have a Kaylee Anthony search, how many people are willing to come out there?
Exactly.
If they think that there's a chance that their information is going to be given to some defense attorney that that doesn't have a clue what's going on in the world, let alone defend a case as high profile as this case.
Yeah, and that's the part that boggles the mind. And, you know, Tim, I was sitting back thinking, and I thought, you know, I can just see this happening now. Tim Miller does $5,000 worth of photocopying, and then the defense attorney decides he doesn't want to pick it up and won't pay for it. And it really means nothing anyway. Like I say, it's like he's farting in a windstorm. It's you're not going to get any effect from it. It's crazy. But I want to, and I know you don't like dwelling on this stuff, but when you see these talk shows, and I know you're on them all the time too, and you can't go on and counter every dumb thing that's said because that just keeps going on, but when you see the cowboy on Nancy Grace every night and he's anything from coming up with this theory to that theory, if I had a buck for every theory that he spouted off on TV, I would be able to make a huge donation to Texas EquiSearch tonight, because he's just full of crap.
Well, you know what, and it was full of crap in the very beginning, Dana. I mean, he was on Nancy Grace every night before we went out there in the second search, and he had these 500 or 50, whatever the number was, bounty hunters that were going to come out and be team leaders. I mean, he personally told me that he went to a convention of bondsmen and bounty hunters and told them to put their money where their mouth is, and he said he had already had seven of them that made a $5,000 donation,
mm-hmm.
Which was $35,000, way early on. And he came out there, Leonard Padilla literally came out there, Dana, without one bounty hunter, except his other three clowns, without one dime, never went on a search with us, put on his circus act of doing a dive out there, which there was no credibility towards that at all, but there's no credibility anything that Leonard Padilla hangs out with. And came into the command center, disrupted the search, literally disrupted it, because he walked around the command center signing autographs, handing out literally trading cards, like baseball trading cards.
Jeez.
Having his picture taken with people, drank the volunteer water and ate the volunteer food.
Yeah. You know, and it just...
But still he's on Nancy Disgrace every night.
Well, yeah, and it's too bad, because there could be such good work done on some of these cable shows, but to give him that 15 minutes of shame every night is just beyond me. But I don't want to talk about him anymore. Let's talk a little bit about Sheriff Barry down there. I know we've talked about him before. There's a class act, a good guy, and he's retiring, is he not, or is he retired?
No, he's gone. Incredible man. John Allen... Incredible man. I spent some time with John last week. In fact, I gave John a report that Leonard Padilla said that Jim Hoover gave us, and we didn't follow up the lead. That's why we didn't find the body, and then we lost the report. Well, I personally gave that report to John Allen, but of course Leonard got some time on TV about that.
Right.
You know, Yuri Melichin, an incredible man. Nick Savage, incredible man. And all this case is doing is making them work harder and harder, because now they got to go ahead and subpoena phone records of the so-called Bowser psychic, which apparently ends up psycho, out of Virginia. And you know what? They've got more cases to work down there than just Kaylee Anthony. This is going to end up and be the most expensive case of any missing person in the history of the United States.
Yep.
And John Allen, Yuri Melich, Nick Savage have done an incredible job. And bottom line, and it's just my feelings, when it comes down to the trial, this is going to be a forensic evidence trial.
Yep.
Anybody say anything they want to say, but it's going to be a forensic evidence trial.
Well,
you know, Dana, we have never turned a person down.
Yep.
And no matter where they were in the United States or in the world until Kaylee Anthony search. And since Kaylee Anthony search, what it's cost us and our resources and certainly our money, we had to say no to 12 different families and law enforcement also has called us. And what I would just love to do, because Kaylee Anthony has nothing except time on her hands.
Yeah, right.
I would love to go ahead and give her these 12 missing person reports, which they want us on that we cannot do, and have her call these families and explain why we can't be there.
Yep.
But you know, I thought about that, and that'd be a terrible thing to do, because she never showed one ounce of emotion over her own daughter's disappearance. So how in the hell is she going to show any for these other 12 families?
Exactly.
So, you know, it's been a nightmare. Casey did not just cause grief in Orlando. She's caused it across the United States. And again, worst phone call I ever got in 8.5 years after 970-some cases was answering the phone from Cindy Anthony, who was on the other end.
I'm so glad that you clarified this crap that Padilla has been spewing on the Gray Show, that information as far as the recovery of Kaylee was handed to you and you didn't do anything about it. That's just plain and simple garbage. But when you see these videos of the private investigators poking around out in that area with the long rods, and you know as important as forensics as anyone can be to a case like this, it just must make the hair on the back of your neck stand up to see that stuff.
Oh, it does. No, it does. I know a lot of stuff about this case, and I'm certainly not going to go on TV and talk about it, and certainly won't talk about it in your show, because I'm not going to interfere in any way in an investigation, but I think there's more going on. I think our meter reader deserves an incredible amount of credibility.
Yep.
In what he did. We had a sheriff deputy that just made a huge mistake.
He was lazy.
And I know this for a fact also, Dana.
Yep.
And I might, you know, maybe I shouldn't even report this right now, but I will. Is that the meter reader had a girlfriend and still has a girlfriend that encouraged him to go back and go back and go back. Mm-hmm. And anyhow, he didn't go back because Leonard Padilla had him convinced that the body was in Blanchard Park.
Yeah.
And after Leonard did his dive in Blanchard Park, the girlfriend of the meter reader says, go back. You know what? Don't give up on this. Go back. So, you know, our meter reader had no motives, had no clues early on. I hate the fact that he accepted $20,000 from Good Morning America. He's going to profit on this. But you know what? There's a lot of other people who are just profiting on this thing. And I'm sure Leonard's got some little trick up his sleeve that he thinks he's going to. But that's the last person in the world that needs 10 cents for anything he's done. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he owes a lot of people a lot of stuff for all his disruption that he's put in every Every time he opens his mouth, you know, Leonard's one of them people. Leonard, please don't move your lips because you're lying.
All right. Tim Miller, Texas EquiSearch. You're always welcome on this program, sir. Thank you.
James, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. And no truer words spoken by Mr. Miller and Texas EquiSearch. We'll be right back.
The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is George Foreman. Nothing is as rewarding as making a difference in someone's life. Someone like Nathan, a four-year-old battling a rare blood disorder. The generosity of a blood donor like you can help save a life, and it only takes about an hour. The American Red Cross encourages you to give the gift of life through blood donation. You can make a difference. Donate blood and encourage your friends, family, and neighbors to give. Call 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. That's 1-800-448-3543. And schedule your appointment today. Join me in making a real difference in the lives of kids like Nathan. And visit givelife.org. That's 1-800-448-3543 and givelife.org and learn more about donating blood.
Remember when you saw the homeless woman in the snow and you almost volunteered to work in a soup kitchen? Or when you saw the news report about wounded soldiers and you almost visited the veterans hospital? Or when you almost brought dinner to your neighbor with AIDS? Remember all those times you almost helped? You meant to. But somehow you forgot, you were too busy, and it slipped your mind. Well, it's only human, this almost giving. But if you almost gave, there's a good chance everybody else almost gave, too. Which means it's quite possible there was no soup kitchen at all. That no one visited those vets, and that your neighbor never got that hot meal. Because almost giving is the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. To find out how, visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. This message brought to you by the Ad Council.
At the football game, Jim shows the telltale signs of being wasted. He attempts to high-five everyone on the way to his section, spilling his $10 beer everywhere. Back in his seat, he screams, "Defense!" His friends remind him it's halftime. He takes off his shirt and starts flexing for the camera. He refers to his muscles as gunboats. Jim screams, "How's this for a halftime show?" He tells the story about the time he flexed for the halftime show. His friend informs him that it just happened. To redeem himself, he streaks the field. Jim makes it to midfield before being tackled. The Jumbotron captures it all. It's easy to tell if you've had way too many to drive. But what if you've had just one too many to drive? Never underestimate just a few. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. We're going to continue on with the Anthony investigation. As I've been saying all evening tonight, we're talking about the poor meter reader, who I think is a hero in this case. We've got the crazy psychic that's running around that can't find her phone records. She should be able to see her phone records without actually physically finding them and be able to, you know, Kreskin could find a spoon hidden under the couch of Johnny Carson's set without, anyway, and that's never mind that. But I want to talk about this deputy, Richard Kane, of the Orange County Sheriff's Department, who's in some caca. In fact, I hear he's been suspended and is working out of the pulled off the street and is working in the property room right now until this is going on. And how law enforcement officials can be a big part of an investigation and how they can be put on the stake, so to speak, when really they're just dumb and lazy, and it, what they did really didn't affect the case that much. You all know Stacey Dittrich is a police officer and author, and as one of the co-hosts of the worldwide famous Justice Interrupted radio show, that's heard Tuesday nights on Blog Talk Radio. Stacey, how are you?
Hi, Dana.
What about this poor deputy? You get an internal affairs investigation put against you, sometimes for a good reason, sometimes for a bad reason. I'm not saying that all policemen out there are top-notch, but I am a big proponent for the cops. I will defend the cops. I will do what I can on the show to make cops look good. But here's a cop who is going to be a part, maybe not as big as Furman was in the O.J. Simpson case. Of course not as big because there was racial things there. But here's a guy who is going to be put up on a cross and torched big time for, in my opinion, just being lazy.
Well, to an extent, I haven't heard the nitty-gritty details about what happened that day, so you might be able to enlighten me. But from what I had heard, it's easy for all of us, and you know me, I'm a big defender of the cops, too, and I've been in situations where you take things with a grain of salt, but it's defense, and maybe there isn't one, and maybe it is a fact of being lazy, because we all work with lazy cops, some of us do. But, in this incident, you've got this huge worldwide case going on, and, I can't imagine if we pulled their dispatch logs, the amount of calls that they were responding to, that someone saw something suspicious that may or may not be related to Kaylee Anthony, or they found a bag. I mean, it's got to be up there numbers-wise. So for this guy to go out there, a mile from the home, and did the guy, and this was the big debate the last I heard about it, was the meter reader still there?
Yeah, the meter reader is said to have been there three times, and I just had Tim Miller on from Texas EquiSearch, and he blew something wide open here. He just announced on my show for the first time anywhere, not even on Nancy Grace or Greta, that the cowboy Leonard Padilla was convincing the meter readers. A girlfriend who kept convincing the meter reader to keep calling the cops that just let it go because he knew that the body was in this, remember the lake search that they were doing because they found some beads hanging in a tree? So Padilla was involved in trying to not have the police go over there. And that was just announced by Tim Miller on my show a few minutes ago. So
So Leonard was wanting them to not go check those woods because he wanted their focus in the river where he was at.
Absolutely, Dootley.
There's a surprise.
Not sounding like Ned Flanders here.
Yeah.
That's what we call obstruction.
I can't wrap my brain around even to this point. Why he's not in jail.
Well, I think he's too little of a fish right now. He's more of a pain in the ass.
Well, that'd be enough for me.
Than he is anything. But yeah, I would say enough's enough. And what Tim Miller said tonight, and I have no reason to doubt Tim Miller, he's the salt of the earth.
Absolutely not.
Is incredible. But here you get a cop. That you're right. If you looked at the dispatch logs and you saw how many times, and apparently there's a news reporter that's going to come on after you that says that this cop's been in trouble before, but really, law enforcement officers, I've had 27 years in, and I've had a few internal affairs investigations against me. It just shows, and you may hate me for saying this, but it shows that you're doing your job.
Absolutely.
But to be lazy, and we've heard stories about a snake was by the bag, or he went by and he looked at it, or, whatever. The focus will be all of a sudden put on him, and according to Tim Miller, that the defense is trying to subpoena the records of who he had searching for him, onto the other people and away, that reasonable doubt crap. The reason why I wanted to bring you on, Stace, is to talk about how officers can be maybe a small part of the investigation, but all of a sudden become a big part of the defense because of a simple boo-boo. And
well, I don't know that it's even a boo-boo. It could be a passing the buck and, the sacrificial lamb on behalf of the sheriff's department, which I don't think at this point they need to do that because they've done, I think, just an amazing job.
Yep.
And, you know, again, it's easy to second guess. You don't know. I don't know if this meter reader stood by why the deputy showed up, because quite frankly, if I got a complaint, is, you know, as busy as we would get, if someone said they found somebody in the woods, dispatch said, okay, stand there and wait for the deputy. If I arrived on scene and that person was no longer waiting, and they're trying to tell me they found a garbage bag in the cement area woods, I'd say, heck with it. That's what we would call a DC 86 complainant. Yep. Did not stand by.
Yep.
We don't have the time to sit there and look through all these woods without some type of pinpointing. Now, if he did, and the guy said, yeah, the bag's over there, that to me, I can't wrap my brain around that a deputy wouldn't walk up if the guy says this bag's right here and open it up. I absolutely, how lazy they are, I just can't imagine the deputy would not do that. As for the rattlesnake, very well could be. But, you know, again, I've heard people saying that he didn't see the bag but was in the woods and saw a rattlesnake, and why didn't he just shoot it? And, well, if you know, Dana, coming from law enforcement, if you want to explain to your upper echelon how you discharged a firearm,
yep,
within a mile of a residential neighborhood over a rattlesnake, you're talking some serious paperwork and discipline for that fact. You know, again, I don't know the details, and I don't think everybody needs to rush and put this deputy down, because one bad thing about law enforcement, and I have been in this position before, being scrutinized by the media, and you're not allowed to defend yourself per department policy. They want to wait until the investigation is complete, and then they will come out and issue half-baked exoneration and, you know, how they do it, which is pretty poor on the officer's part. So I think at this point we should just sit back and wait and see what the department's investigation comes up with. And like you said, most people that show internal investigations in their jackets are more active officers. I can tell you right now, some cops I've known through the years that you can barely get them out of the car, they absolutely have no internal investigations in there because they don't do anything.
Absolutely. Stacy Dittrich is here with me. And one thing about police officers is not only do you have the court of the land that you live in, or the jurisdiction that you live in, to deal with if you're accused of something, but you also have the court of public opinion and the court of the police service that you work for, the internal discipline regulations. So cops are pretty much damned if they do and damned if they don't in situations. They can get them internally, they can get them criminally, whatever.
Right.
Doing IA investigations, and I've done them, is tough, because you don't want any bad apples in your basket, but you also know that police officers are under a huge amount of scrutiny, and this deputy in Orange County that was, you know, lazy or whatever, is just one of a few that, you know, well, there'll be a case tomorrow where there'll be a deputy that's accused of something in a case. And look at Mark Furman in O.J. Simpson case. You know, he was just an arrogant a-hole that couldn't keep his mouth shut, got recorded, and that got brought back however many years later, and a person accused of murder got away with it, in my belief, not just because of the forensics, because the jury didn't like Mark Furman and thought there was a racial issue.
Well, I don't know how anybody could get up there on the stand. I know what I say on tape, whether it's 15 years ago or 5 minutes ago. And to get up there and say, no, I've never said that, knowing that there is a tape out there somewhere, was extremely ignorant on his part.
Yeah, absolutely. Stacy Dittrich is here. Justice Interrupted, what's coming up on your next show?
You know what? That's a good question. We are leaving that up to Susan this week, because Robin and I, you know, Stand By Atlanta, Robin's back is flying in.
Uh-oh.
Robin and I are going to be in Atlanta, so Susan's kind of running the show.
Okay.
We haven't gotten the guest list or anything yet, so she's kind of, I don't know, it's a surprise. Tune in.
Well, that's sometimes, those are the best shows. I find out my guest list 20 minutes before I go on, too, and they're more spontaneous that way. Stacy, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
That's Stacy Dittrich, and we'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
All right, we're back. In tonight's update on the Anthony case, I have Mark Williams. You know Mark is the news director of WNDB Radio, and he's also a regular on the Nancy Grace program. Welcome back, Mark.
Hey, it's good to be back with you, Dana.
We've got lots to talk about. We've got PIs, and we've got psychics, and videotapes, and and deputies, and you name it. It's, like I say, this thing never seems to end. Let's start with the PI, the videotape that we've seen so much of on Nancy Grace, and now we have a psychic claiming that she was on the other line, and, well, you can buy that or not, but let's get into that part of it.
Okay. The deal is, there are two PIs in this case. One PI is named Dominic Casey. The other guy is named Jim Hoover.
Right.
The video that we've all seen on the Grace Show is the video that Hoover shot on November 16th of Dominic Casey, who is going through this wooded area about 150 feet where they eventually found Kaylee's body. The deal is he has a long metal probe, a rod, and he's poking into the ground. Then there's other tape showing him going to an abandoned house and ripping through black plastic bags with a sharp object. That's the big thing. He was also seen, Dominic Casey was also seen on the phone. Initially, he said he was talking to his daughter who has been ill.
Right.
But then the psychic comes forth and says, oh, I was on the phone with Dominic Casey. My head spins.
Yeah.
I get a headache just thinking about this, Dana.
You know, the only psychic that I remember that was worth a damn, I think, was, remember the Amazing Kreskin? He used to come on Johnny Carson a long time ago. And listen, I'm not making fun of this because there have been a lot of crimes that have been assisted, crimes being solved that have been assisted with psychics. But it seems like there's the personalities that pop up in this case, Mark, looking for their 10 or 15 minutes of fame seem to show up. And it just makes this case even more bizarre. What can you tell us about the psychic?
Well, I don't know that much about the psychic. Apparently, she's based in the Northeast, and she admitted that she was on the phone with Dominic Casey, but she can't produce her phone records. Well, I have not heard anything, but I think authorities obviously are going to be looking at phone records from Dominic Casey as well as Jim Hoover to see who, in fact, Dominic Casey was calling. Or who he was talking to on the phone, because that obviously shows up on any billing records, not only billing, but the phone company, and whoever your web provider or whoever your wireless provider is has those records. So it's not brain surgery. I just don't think they've gotten around to it at all.
Yeah, and you got to wonder just how important it is. But what is important, or what seems to be important, and a lot of the analysts are talking about it, is the fact that these private investigators were in the area where Kaylee was found, or close to it, and they're wondering just how long someone actually may have known that she may have been out there, and did it or did it not obstruct with the investigation. What have you heard?
Well, you know, you bring up a good point. I don't think those guys knew that they were so close to finding Kaylee. I really don't think so in my heart. I think they were just, they just had this hunch and they were directed there because they were given a tip, at least Dominic Casey was given a tip by saying that's where Kaylee or Casey and her friends used to hang out as teenagers. You know, another twist in this case, of course, is the meter reader who eventually found little Kaylee's remains. He picked up the black plastic bag on December 11th, and the skull rolls out.
Yeah.
There have been three times. He had visited that area three times. He had not been given decent service by the Orange County Sheriff's Office. They've kind of, how should I say this, just sloughed him off.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that has come back to bite one deputy by the name of Richard Kane, who came in and he just kind of poked and prodded around and just gave a cursory look, not even a thorough look at the area. And he was the closest of all, and he didn't see anything. And he is being investigated. He's been reassigned to the supply office. He has no gun. He has no badge, but he still is a member of the sheriff's office. He can't represent himself as a deputy. He's just been reassigned until his investigation is over with. He's had two other complaints against him. Basically, Dana, the same thing. Not performing the way he should as a deputy.
Yeah, and it's lazy police work, probably, at best. And you have to wonder with the PIs if they weren't just conducting their own search. church. The conspiracy theorists and everyone else seems to be putting more into a lot of this than it actually is. I can't say one way or another, but one thing that has come forward, Mark Williams is here to talk about the Anthony case, and it's come from Tim Miller, Texas EquiSearch, who will be guesting on the program tonight also, about Jose Baez wanting information from him about his searchers, and there seems to be a bit of a fight going on there.
Well, and here's the deal. Jose Baez, who's Casey Anthony's lead attorney, wants Tim Miller to turn over personal information of his volunteers as to who showed up, what they did, so on and so forth. And that leads to a lot of personal information being given out. First off, Tim Miller does not have the resources whatsoever to do that for Jose Baez. I think Jose Baez is just trying to strike out in the night, if you will, because there's nothing I don't think he could gain by having Miller turn over his information. I mean, we're talking about a volunteer organization, a guy by the name of Tim Miller, who was a victim of crime when his daughter went missing, and he started Texas EquiSearch, and they do a great job. They came to Orlando back in November, on November 8th, and conducted a search with several thousand people. It would be impossible for Tim Miller to resurrect all those things, have them copied, and given over to defense attorney Jose Baez. I think, you know, personally, and I'm going to get on my soapbox now, I think Jose Baez is now backed into a corner, and he does not know what to do, because everything is pointing right now, all the evidence is pointing towards Casey Anthony, his client. Tim Miller, I have not met Tim. I hope to meet him one of these days. But this guy is soul to the earth. He has all the good intentions in the world.
Yeah, Tim's a great guy, and I think I agree with you, Baez. It's just blowing hot air. Just before I let you go, Mark, another video jailhouse visit between George, Cindy, and Casey has been released. An older video, but it finally shows some emotion with Casey Anthony. I don't know. I found it somewhat interesting, but certainly nothing that will make or break the case. What have you been hearing?
Well, here's the deal. I saw part of the video when it was released, and we have a person here, Casey Anthony, talking to her parents, and it's called The Lost Video. She is portraying herself as a victim. She doesn't talk that much about Kaylee. She just says that she is a victim of what is going on. They apparently have watched a Grace episode with her, with Jose Baez, her attorney. They kind of chuckled about it, but you can do all the chuckling that you want behind bars. You are not a victim. Your daughter was a victim, you know, and she portrays herself as a victim, and she is not a victim by any stretch of the imagination, Dana.
No, absolutely. There's only one person that's allegedly responsible for the death of this child, and she's sitting in jail right now. And, you know, who knows what we'll have next week. Maybe the psychic will come forward and say she's been communicating with you, Mark. It's hard to say.
Well, he has to get through my firewall first.
That's right. Mark Williams, it's always a pleasure to have you. Thank you, sir.
Okay, anytime, Dana.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Mark Williams from WNVB, the news director there, and you see him as a regular guest on the Nancy Grace Show. Yeah, this gets stranger and stranger and stranger, and I hope shows like the Grace Show and others will blow off this psychic as quick as some of the hurricane force winds blow off shingles off roofs down in Florida. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. And we are right back, and that's it. That's tonight's show. If you want to learn more about the program, go to www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to podcasts of past shows, commentaries, whatever you would like to do. We'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.